You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Monday, June 18th. I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. On today's show, I'm diving deep into two more draft prospects with Fear the Sword draft expert Trevor Magnotti. We're talking about Mikal Bridges from Villanova and Wendell Carter from Duke. These are two guys that I think would make sense for the Cavs today. One would be more of a safe pick. One would obviously only be there if he falls, but I think Trevor is very high, and he did a lot of interesting analysis on what Carter could provide in both a LeBron and non-LeBron context. Be sure to find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. You can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Lockdown Cavs. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at CWM Rights. And if you aren't already, you can listen and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, Overcast, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to support the podcast in the best way possible, please go on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave that 5-star rating and review. That is going to help more people find the show, and it's the best way to make me happy as a podcaster. We're going to be back tomorrow with another draft prospect preview as well as some player reviews. Thanks again to everyone that has supported the show this whole way. This week will be a busy week for the pod. We'll be having an episode every day through the draft, including an instant draft reaction and then a deep draft breakdown on Friday. So Thursday night, you'll get an instant reaction to the pick and then maybe any rumors that are out there, and then Friday, we'll go from there. We'll also maybe get into this Kawhi LeBron situation later in the week as well, depending if more information comes up about what Kawhi's doing and if anything for LeBron's camp leaks up. But without further ado, it's a draft-specific episode with Trevor Magnotti talking about Wendell Carter and Mikal Bridges. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Trevor, welcome back first. We're going to talk about another big. Last time you were here, we talked about Trae Young and Mo Bamba. Wendell Carter from Duke is up next. He's someone that I learned a lot about from your piece about him that you can read for the Sword. You are very high on his fit with the Cavs. So in lieu of, we're going to get to his overall fit in LeBron and non-LeBron as we've done before. But let's start with, what about him makes you intrigued as him as a prospect? Like, when you look at Wendell Carter and you look at his potential availability, number 8 in this draft, what to you stands out as something to say, hey, this guy is someone the Cavs should absolutely consider taking and investing a pick in?
I think the biggest reason that I'm high on Carter is that I kind of subscribe to the idea that high-level intelligence is becoming more and more valuable as a piece of a player's building block in the NBA. You need to be a high-level decision maker on both ends of the floor to be able to cut it as a high-level rotation piece, especially in the playoffs. And of all of the big men in this class, Wendell Carter is the best decision maker and has the best feel for the game of any of those big men. Better than Ayton, certainly better than Bagley. I like him a little bit better in that regard than Jaren Jackson even. He is just the best decision maker that I have in this class, and that's why I'm so high on him. The biggest place is where that manifests are the two other biggest strengths that I have for him. He is a great passer. He is a passer on par with some of the best guys that we see in the NBA today. Maybe not Nikola Jokic, but I would put his ceiling as a passer on par with a Marc Gasol. He is so good at reading a defense, finding cutters. He can even make kind of those cross court skip passes out of the post with good technique. He just has a great array of skills in terms of vision and in terms of his actual touch on passes that we rarely see in big men. The other area where that comes into play is team defense. He is not somebody that's going to be a good rim protector in the way that we consider, you know, your typical center, but he is a very smart team defender. Part of the reason that Duke had this big turnaround in the second half of the season And once they went to zone, Carter was the man in the middle of that zone, and he was the one who was kind of erasing mistakes. Even though he wasn't really protecting the rim at a high level, he was putting himself in the right positions, especially to cover up for his own weaknesses. And I think that that's very valuable heading into the NBA. I just really like his or the way that he thinks the game at a level that is higher than some of his or than many of his. Many of the other players in this draft, and I think that that's going to be something that is very valuable heading into the NBA. I can see a very strong role for him right away, just because he understands and adapts to systems a lot better. It is very difficult to switch from going almost exclusively man-to-man to playing almost exclusively zone in the middle of the year in college. It is something that is very difficult to do. That's why teams don't really do that often. And he was the guy who kind of took to that and made that difference so big for Duke. So I think that that's something that stuck with me a lot. And I think that's why I'm a little bit more forgiving of some of his deficits, which we'll talk about, that kind of weigh him down on other boards. I kind of forgive those because functionally he puts himself in the right place majority of the time, and that's a lot. That's more than you can ask of a lot of the other big men in this class.
So this is a big heavy draft at the top. You have Ayton, you have Bagley, you have Jaren Jackson, you have Mo Bamba. What separates Carter from those guys? What's generally, it seems like he's behind these guys on draft boards. If he's not there for you, I know he's ahead of at least Bamba for you, but what separates him from being in the same class as some of the guys at the top of this class?
Well, I think he just kind of has a cap on what his ceiling is, just because he's this high-level thinker, but athletically he just doesn't match up at the same level. He is not a very good lateral athlete, really struggles to defend in space and when put on an island. I don't know that he's going to be a very good switchable big. I think he's going to have to be in more of a hedge and recover system, kind of like Boston plays, where he's not going to be somebody that's going to be able to switch everything. He's going to kind of have to be helped by some quicker and stronger wings to be able to be a good defender. He's not a good traditional rim protector as well, and I think that that's something that's a little bit problematic. And he's not as good of a finisher either as the three guys that I have ahead of him, especially Bagley, Jackson, and Ayton are all very good finishers at the rim. And I think that that's something that's a little bit problematic for him. Carter's more of kind of like a mid-post floater touch guy than he is like a power guy. And I don't know how well that translates to him playing a little bit more pick and roll. So those are kind of my big concerns with him. Is it's the body, it's the athleticism. He's a little bit undersized as well. He's about 6'10", does have a pretty good wingspan, but doesn't have the same frame as some of the other guys in this draft. And I think that those things are going to limit his ability to potentially be the star player. I think that if he does reach his ceiling, which I think is kind of like an Al Horford multi-time all-star second best player on a contending team upside, I think that he does it in a way that is not going to be very aesthetically pleasing. He's going to be a guy who's going to get the same things that we see with Al Horford, where people don't really find his game watchable. People don't find his game very appealing, but it works time and again on the court. So I think that he's going to have I think that he's a guy that's very safe. I don't think that he's a guy that has a ceiling as some of the other guys that I have ahead of him.
So what, going off of that, when you look at some of his weaknesses, you in your kind of listing this out when we planned for this, it was lateral agility, rim protection, shot creation. What if he is, let's say, a center who is doing some of these issues? What do those type of weaknesses do for his ceiling? You've hinted this a little bit, but can you go into those weaknesses a little bit more? And what does that do for his ceiling as a player?
Well, I think it ends up being a situation. I've made the Horford comparison, and everybody makes that because he's the smart player that doesn't have great athleticism, doesn't have great size, but finds a way to be effective anyway. Is he's going to be a guy who is going to get muscled out by more athletic bigs. You get your power guys like an Ed Davis, for example, or in this class of Robert Williams, who they aren't, you know, the smartest players, they aren't the most skilled players, but they have a high motor and they can put a knee into your chest and power through you. He really struggles with those. The thing that sticks with me more than anything is there are when Michigan Michigan State played Duke in the beginning of the season, and he went up against Jaren Jackson. There was a play where Jackson took Bagley off the dribble. Carter slid over to help, had both hands up, got into Jackson's body, and Jackson just powered right through him, and was able to get to the line off of that. Carter struggled with a little bit of foul trouble early in the season, and that was a big reason why, was he just does not have the functional strength to be a good challenger, especially in a man-to-man system. And I kind of worry that in the NBA is going to be something that's going to be picked apart. He's going to have his matchups where he is going to lose them. And it's going to be guys like the same ones that Horford has trouble with. Your high motor, high athleticism, kind of four or five types. And I think that that's going to be something that's going to limit him a little bit.
There is something very funny to me about the Cavs drafting a player who is the best version of him and like turns in Al Horford. There's just something like, not that it's like bad, because Al Horford's great and like he's been kind of disrespected by Cavs fans for a couple of years, but he's freaking awesome. Yeah. And it just, there's something funny to me about that.
Yeah, I can already see kind of 3 years down the line what the conversations between Ryan Morton and Matt Moore are going to look like, but that's for another time.
Yeah, right. Shouts to Ryan. But so you look at his fit, with LeBron, without LeBron, which of those, we'll start with whichever one, which one do you think is a better fit for Carter as a prospect? Is it with LeBron or is it without LeBron?
I think it's with LeBron. I think that he, having these high intellect guys who may not have his higher ceiling, but you can see kind of a natural role for, that's the type of guy that is going to make a bigger immediate impact with the Cavs as a contender. I think that he can kind of slide into the center rotation. He can be a guy that can take minutes at the four next to Tristan. He's a guy that obviously gives you two very high IQ interior passers if you pair him with Kevin Love, and I think that that's a situation that's going to work out really well for him, is you put him with guys that are going to complement his strengths. Love with his ability to space the floor, Tristan with his ability to defend in space, even Nance with his ability to protect the rim. I think that that's a good rotation for him to be in. If or without LeBron, him being your lone star, I mean, you're basically angling for RJ Barrett there. He's not going to be a guy who's going to move the needle on a bad team. That's just not the way that it's going to work out. So I think that he's a guy that's going to be much more enticing if you're pretty committed to LeBron staying. If it gets to a situation where, you know, Carter's the last man out of the group of eight that that is standing, you're probably better off just taking Miles Bridges if you're pretty sure that LeBron's gone, because you might as well take that chance at a higher ceiling outcome and higher creator value than trying to take this guy who is going to be really valuable on a playoff contender someday, but may not actually help you become a playoff contender.
That is a really interesting take, because I could see, because like when I think about a scenario where there is no LeBron, where the Cavs are trying to rebuild, maybe there's a scenario where they can get off Tristan's contract, and I think that'll be very hard for them to do. But like maybe there's something there where like you move forward, and you, if he's your guy at eight because just the other guys are off the board, and you don't love Bridges, or you don't love either Bridges for whatever reason, and he slides in there. To me, it seems like there's something interesting about taking him and having him replace Thompson. And I know based on reporting and other reporters' work that they love Nance. I think Nance is going to be around. You slide him in and you kind of move forward with him and Nance as your, and Osman is sort of your core, and you've got really smart guys that do different things. And yes, you need RJ Barrett and like another star to like really elevate that group, because none of these guys are going to be elite NBA players. None of them might even be all-stars, frankly. But like, to me, there's something interesting about getting a guy like this at the beginning of your rebuild. It would be very different too from the rebuild we've seen with the Cavs. You go back to how they rebuild post LeBron. It was Kyrie. It was betting on the athleticism of Tristan. It was hoping that the talent of Deion Waiters would win out. It was hoping that they could mold Anthony Bennett's potential into something, and you know, taking Wiggins over you know, Jabari at that case, and the upside of Wiggins, even though they did flip him. But like, it would be interesting for the Cavs to go in that different direction, to me, if there was a rebuild. Just take the guy with the high IQ and maybe not the jump out of the gym athleticism or the potential to turn into the next great big. But if like you get Al Horford, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, and I think that works for other teams. I think that if you're the Bulls at seven, it makes a lot more sense to take him than Mikal Bridges, kind of for that same reason, because I think that having that high IQ guy is really good. But this is the Cavs. They're not going to do it. So, yeah, at the end of the day, like, yeah, that's not happening. So,
well, and let's also in the we didn't talk about this last time, but it is worth noting that this will be the first draft that Kobe Altman and Mike Gainsey was running the Kenton Charge up until this season. He's the one doing a lot of the draft where Kobe's involved. Dan Gilbert's obviously involved, but it's a lot of Mike Gainsey on this, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of touch they go with. But I'm intrigued by Wendell Carter. You wrote a really good piece about him, but Trevor, let's give everyone just a quick on the way out of here. When you think about, this is the guy that when we did the first two, I noted this on the intro of that podcast, it seems like Bamba and Trae Young, based on what we're seeing and what we're reading, it seems like there might not be there at eight. Compared to some of the other guys out there, I mean, do you think it's likely that Carter actually kind of is there at eight, or at least is in play? Because it seems like the earliest I've seen him go is maybe like six, or like somewhere there, if like the Magic or someone else takes him. But I don't know. Is there a chance like he does get taken like way ahead of some of the other guys that maybe have the more upside than he does?
I think there's definitely a shot. It kind of depends on how the team's picking kind of 4, 5, 6, 7 value the bigs outside of Ayton and Jackson. And because I know from seeing some of the other things and seeing some of the things that I've read that teams are very widely differing on Bamba and Bagley. Some teams really like Bagley, and there's potential that he could go top three. There's potential he could also slip out of the top five completely. And there are teams that are really going to like Wendell Carter a lot better than they're going to like Bamba or Bagley, because they're going to value that high intellect. And you kind of have the Magic thrown in the middle there, who just absolutely under no circumstances need another big man. So that kind of complicates things too for them. So I think that there's a high chance that he's there at eight. I think there's a very good chance that he goes at five too. It all depends on how these teams end up valuing the guys after kind of the consensus top three or top four.
All right, Trevor, we're going to continue our series here talking about Mikal Bridges from Villanova. He's one of the two Bridges that could be in play, number eight for the Cavs. He is the guy that I am most intrigued by, just because I think the Cavs are in this weird situation where they might be forced to draft based on an unknown variable of LeBron James's future. That could force them to pick a guy, in my mind, who could fit a rebuild or fit a situation where you're trying to contend right away. And Bridges, I think, based on what we know about him, projects as a guy who at his best is going to be a really high upside role player. When you think about like what he is, and like just what is like the biggest line for Mikal Bridges, like if he comes in and like the Cavs ask him to contribute on a good team as a rookie, what is the what does he bring to the table potentially right away?
Well, I think just the baseline of really high 3-and-D play, or high-level 3-and-D play. He is a guy who is far beyond what we typically see when we think of guys who are going to be – who you draft with the goal of being a 3-and-D wing. He is a very polished catch-and-shoot guy. He has a very good jumper form. He's put a lot of work and effort into kind of perfecting his shot, and has taken a big leap since his freshman season in that regard. I think that that is something that is going to be very valuable for him. He has very good form, very consistent, and has done a ton for Villanova. But the last 2 years, that has been his role. He is the catch and shoot guy. The other thing that I'm really impressed with is his combination of speed and functional speed and strength. He is very strong for his frame. He has pretty good strength, especially heading towards the rim. Great finisher around the rim. Good touch in that regard, and he moves his feet really well side to side. I really like his lateral agility, his ability to contain in the pick and roll, his ability to trap on the bait and use the baseline as a weapon when defending on closeouts in the corner. I think that he's a guy who's going to be able to defend a lot of different types of actions right away in the NBA. He's a guy that's going to be able to understand the role category, and is not going to need a lot of kind of deprogramming, so to speak. He's not a guy that's going to go from a number one option to being an NBA role player. He's going from the role he played at Villanova to the same role in the NBA, more than likely. So I really like his ability to just kind of, I've said it from the beginning of the year, he is plug and play 3D in a way that we usually don't see among college level wings. And I think that that's something that's going to really work out in his favor.
So I look at him and I look at a guy that I just am fascinated by, not just what he could be, but like that he could just hit like a baseline level of competence as a creator. That's just so valuable in this NBA. Like, you just look at like what Clay can do as like a little bit of creation, or what the Cavs could have just used another guy who could attack off the dribble a little bit. That is just so, so valuable. Is there a chance that he comes in and is this as a rookie? And then, as you know, let's say it's with LeBron, without LeBron, that over the first 3-4 years of his career on that rookie contract, that he does turn into something that is more valuable. Like, is there a chance that like this guy just does sort of just turn into like a, not maybe not a star, but like a borderline all-star player, because he can create a little bit and because he can just do enough of other stuff besides being elite at this three, at the 3-and-D side of the game?
Yeah, I definitely think there's that upside for him. I think that the things that, when most of that are things that we saw in his decision to come back to Villanova. As a sophomore, he was pretty much exclusively a rim finisher, spot-up shooter, and defensive player. And this year, he added the ability to shoot off movement, which was big for him. This is something that Miles Bridges also added. We're not going to kind of touch on him here, but both of them got a lot better at shooting off movement, coming off of screens, coming off of rotation on the perimeter. And I think that's really valuable for building that catch and shoot skill set. He also added a little bit of a pull-up jumper, which is nice. It's not anything that's super special, but with continued work could be something that could be very valuable for him. And I think that I like his touch around the rim a lot. He's best going in a straight line at the basket, but he's got a pretty workable floater. He's got a nice little scoop shot. He's got the ability to finish with both hands and kind of contort his body in the air. I like his body control to a degree. So I think that there's that chance that he's the secondary playmaker that you can get going downhill at the rim off of a high screen or off of a dribble handoff, and he can be a creator. He's a really smart passer as well. So I think that all that stuff's there for him to kind of grow into kind of this Chris Middleton type secondary handler and creator in a way that most 3-and-D guys who are either stationary shooters or kind of this jack-of-all-trade defensive wing aren't ever able to master.
Two follow-up questions we'll ask, and we'll be done with Bridges. Number one, can he defend like two positions, like 3-4? Can he go 2-3-4? And number two, if let's say that there's a they take him, LeBron walks, he's part of your young core, it's him and Jetty. Is that a good building block wing? I guess having two guys who play smart, who play hard, who have these skills that are sort of projectable as 3-and-D and maybe more to some degree. Is that, in your mind, like a good building block start to have that type of guy? And how weird, also, just as someone who you cut your teeth along with me of covering the Kyrie Dion Cavs, would it be for them to go that direction as opposed to taking a bunch of guys who don't really fit well together?
Yeah, I think it kind of hurts them in the short term, because again, as we talked about with Wendell Carter, you're not getting that primary creator, and so you're getting someone with limited upside. He does have that upside there, but you're relying on probably a lot of Jordan Clarkson when it comes to shot creation, if that's the case.
That's the tank. Like, that is the tank just backing all the way up for RJ Barrett. Like, that is what that is. If it's just like Jetty, Jordan Clarkson, and Zizic and Mikal Bridges and like Larry Nance, that is Dane Gilbert being like, we're tanking for RJ Barrett, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that that's a pretty good situation if you've got Osman and Bridges there. Those are two guys that are not going to make mistakes. They're going to try hard, and they're going to have that length and positional size that is going to allow them to switch back and forth from positions. I think that Jetty is a nice little running mate for Bridges, because one of my concerns with Bridges as a defender is that he doesn't have kind of that upper body strength that is going to allow him to be able to switch onto fours consistently. He's going to be able to handle some guys. He might be able to D up like an Aaron Gordon type, but he's not going to be able to contend with, you know, potentially having to deal with Al Horford on a switch or something like that. He's going to get posted in that regard. So I think that having a guy who's a little bit bigger that can handle that a little bit better, as I think Osmond's going to be able to, gives them a lot of versatility. And, you know, that's a great situation if Tyronn Lue is back in the kind of low probability outcome that LeBron Weaves and Lou stays. You give him and his kind of super crazy switching defense two really good switchable defenders, and that's a good starting outcome, because then suddenly you can hide whoever your point guard is. You can hide probably Zizic and keep him from getting stranded on the perimeter. I think that those are pretty valuable building blocks to build around, and I think that's really going to help kind of whatever their young core ends up becoming. I think that's a pretty good foundation. Plus, you can bet on the upside that, you know, maybe 4 years down the line, when it comes to extension time, Mikal Bridges is your second or third best offensive player as well.
This will be the last question on him. Does he need long term? Did you think he needs like a guy to do a lot? Look at what Middleton has in Giannis, a guy that can do a lot of the creating and does a lot of the ball handling. Does he need that around him to be the best version of himself? Like, long term, do you think you need that guy, a ball dominant start, to kind of maximize what Bridges is?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that he's ever going to be a guy that's going to be able to take 20 shots in a game and have that go well for you. He's going to be best when he is shooting like 4 of 7, and 3 of those are 3s, 2 of those are slashes to the rim, and shots that are being created for him. And I don't think there's anything really wrong with that. I think that, you know, you can draft him at 8 and have that be the case and still get a very valuable player for either your championship contender or your rebuild. The type of player that Bridges is going to become is the rarest type of player in the NBA. The 3-and-D wing that can switch potentially 1 through 3, defend on ball, and defend point guards, and then create a little bit for himself and spot up and hit threes reliably. You can't find those guys growing on trees. Teams try or contenders try every year, and that's how you end up with guys like Rodney Hood, is by trying to reach for that. So I think that, you know, it's a pretty safe projection to say that Bridges does not have very far to make that type of impact. And I think that, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to need help, but he's also going to be a guy who's going to make your primary creator better because of what he brings elsewhere on the court.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. Find Trevor again on Twitter at IllegalScreens. You can find me on Twitter at CWMWright and the pod on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. And you can find me and the pod on Facebook as well. Again, leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. That is the best way to support the show. And thanks everyone that has already done it. Drop your mailbag questions into lockedoncavs@gmail.com as well. Back tomorrow. Thanks again for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Monday, June 18th. I am Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com. Cheers, y'all.